Bedtime is Ian Banks' new novel Stonemouth, about an Aberdeenshire town ruled by two rival gangs. It's a cold, dark Friday evening, and Stuart Gilmore has returned home for a funeral, his first visit in 5 years.
Loving you isn't the right thing to do. How can I ever change things that I feel?
Friday evening. Clarity, that would have been good. Instead, a cold, clinging mist. Not even mist, just a chill haze drifting up the estuary. I'm standing 50 metres above the Firth of Stoon in the middle of the road bridge. I look up at the North Tower and I'm wondering how well the cameras up there can see through the haze. I've been standing here for a couple of minutes, looking like a prospective jumper for all that time. Usually by now a wee yellow van would have been sent along the cycle track from the control centre to come and make sure I'm not thinking of doing something stupid. I look down at the waves again, wondering what Callum's last thoughts were as he fell towards the water, and whether he died without waking up or had time to suffer. Our school days felt an age away by the time Callum vaulted the safety railings on the road bridge, but we still all knew one another, all kept in some sort of contact. So it had an effect on every one of us, even me, the exile. At the time, I thought maybe I'd be invited back to that funeral, but I wasn't. Still too soon. Emotions too raw. And here comes a wee yellow bridge van. I'm here to meet somebody, I think about telling whoever's driving the van as it approaches. The nearest man, the passenger, rolls down his window. It's Powell Imrie, the man I'm here to meet. I'm still not sure whether to be relieved or terrified. All right, Stu, I nod. I hate it when people call me Stu. He looks up, grimaces. Coming on terrain. Jump in the back. I hesitate, then go to the rear of the van and open one of the doors. Jump in, Powell repeats. I don't get in. I close the door and look round the side of the van to Powell's frowning face. I'll walk. After a moment, the van whines backwards, reversing to keep pace with me. Powell is in the driver's seat now, massive mitts gripping the steering wheel. He's smiling thinly at me. The bridge employee who was driving is in the back. Happy now? Cheers, I tell both of them, and get in. You well, Stu? Powell asks as we speed back down the path. Yeah, fine, I say. You? He flashes a smile at me. Dandy. Just dandy. How's Ellie? She's fine. Take it you know about Callum. Yeah, of course. Not totally out of touch. We're sitting in Powell's black Range Rover Sport in the viewing area near the bridge control centre. My more modest hired Ford car is a couple of bays away. So, Stewie, Powell says, what was it you wished to discuss? I look him in the eye. Am I okay to come back, Pow? Powell nods wisely. Aye. Best to check. Feelings were running high and all that, eh? There's movement outside the window. Black and white check pattern. Jeez, it's the cops. Powell swivels, grins, thumbs the window down. Douglas, that you?
Evening, Mr. Imrie.
Powell laughs. What are you doing this side of the Firth, Dougie? This is bandit country for you guys, is it no?
Aye,
the officer says with a sheepish grin. He nods towards the bridge control buildings.
Overseen the brother-in-law. He's a rigger.
Powell looks down at him.
I'd invite you in, but you're dripping.
No, it's all right.
He stares in at me.
That your car over there?
Aye. Hired.
Saw that? Left your side lights on, sir.
Did I? Thanks. Thought I heard an extra beep or two. Dougie walks off through the drizzle. Powell runs the window back up and sighs.
Where were we? Oh, yes. Aye. You're clear to land, Stewie boy. No harm scheduled to befall. Not at our hands, anyway. You're still not on Mr. M's Christmas list, and he'd appreciate a wee visit, maybe this evening, just so you can pay your respects. But no, you're fine. You here long?
Just the weekend. For Joe's funeral, aye, for the funeral. Joe asked for me to be here himself. I open the door. A few drops of rain swirl in. I get out and stand looking in at Powell. Thanks, Pow. He looks pleased at this, so it was probably worth the small amount of self-esteem it cost me. Powell's Range Rover burbles to the evening while I walk over to my hire car. The still-on side lights welcome me, reproachful. 5 minutes later, I'm driving into Stonemouth. The quickest road from the bridge to the Murston house doesn't go through the centre of town. Sometimes in winter there was snow up there for days before any appeared on the ground in the town, and the house seemed some sort of half-mythical mountain palace. Callum Murston, denying it was his mum and dad's house when I pointed it out to him from Art Room 2, didn't help demystify it either. "Hey Callum, isn't that your house up there on the hill?" Callum squinted, already frowning aggressively, and finally saw where I was pointing. "No, it's not," he said, sounding angry and looking like he was going to hit me. By that time, I'd come to accept that the place was the Murston family gaff, and I just assumed he was denying it to mess with me, or because he was oddly embarrassed at coming from what was obviously a very large house. All the same, it was largely because of the house glimpsed through the trees that I persevered in getting to know Callum and becoming one of his friends, and it was largely through Callum and the just-deceased Joe that I got to know the rest of the family. The cloud is clearing a little as I swing the car between the tall, ornate gateposts of the Murston house. A guy in blue overalls appears from behind a truck. It's Stevie Ross, from the year above me at school. "Hiya, stranger!" He comes up and shakes my hand. "You know about Callum, eh?" "Off the bridge," I say. "Good to see you, Stuart." I leave him and go to the front door. A young Asian woman I don't recognise answers the bell and shows me into the conservatory. I can hear a radio or iPod playing pop somewhere in the house. After a few minutes, I start to suspect I'm being put in my place by being made to wait. So I sit down and wait. I pull out the iPhone. Normally I'd play a game or check emails, but all I do is tweet where I am and put the phone away. Before I ever got to know the Murstons or got invited to their house, a gang of us set off on an expedition to check the place out one sunny Sunday afternoon. There was me, Dom Lennett, Al Dunn, Wee Malky and Bodie Ferguson. Down the hillside, beyond a straggled line of trees, lay the long, waverly manicured fairways of Jamfside Golf Club. We found a way over a fence using a handy tree, used a sort of tunnel through the whin that was probably a deer route, and got to the edge of the 12th fairway. Dom suddenly decided it'd be the height of wit to deposit what he described as a big steaming toley down the nearest hole, which happened to be the 11th.
"Oh, Dom, didn't be daft, man. I'm not staying to witness this. You'll get the jail."
I just jogged off to the far side of the fairway, shaking my head.
"You're dead, Gilmore,"
Dom shouted after me.
"Oh, Stu, didn't he? Come on."
That was Al.
"You're such an only child, Stuart," Ferg yelled.
"You'll get a jail."
And so I was able to watch from the perfect cover of a little whin-covered hillock as the next group of golfers appeared over the rise just as Dom got his trousers down and started squatting over the hole. Al was holding the pin. The four golfers stood open-mouthed for a moment, then yelled, abandoned their bags and charged. I slipped away through the bracken, heading uphill for the trees and the meadow, careful to move with as little disturbance as possible. But I was never in any real danger. I saw the girl riding the horse then. She'd been beautiful, graceful, long legs and a serene face on a slender neck, her hair either short or gathered up under her riding hat. It was Ellie, I think. When I mentioned this to her years later, she wasn't so sure, and said sometimes her friends came and rode her ponies. "Mr. Murston says to see you now," a female voice says, and I follow the Asian girl through the house. "I'm Stuart," I tell her, as the pop music gets gradually louder. "Maria," the girl says, opening the door to the pool and fitness suite annex with all the windows and blinds and the white Greco-Roman columns. She's gone before I can say nice to meet you, and I'm confronted with Donnie Murston, the not-yet-greying head of the Murston clan.
"Aye, it's yourself, Stuart."
"Evening, Mr. M."
"Too feared to call me Donald these days, eh, Stuart?"
He nods, inspection finished.
Done all right for yourself, Stuart? Or just putting on an act, eh? Dressing up?
The breath I was going to use to speak sort of collapses out of me. But I smile as tolerantly as I can. I'm doing okay.
What is it you do, anyway?
Lighting.
Lighting?
He frowns. Buildings, I tell him. Exteriors, mostly.
Where are you based?
London. He's still just staring at me. I don't know if that's contempt in his eyes or indifference. Just been made a partner.
Aye, very nice.
He nods, sucking his lips in.
Let's not pretend everything's hunky-dory, eh? Or you're still always welcome in this house, eh, Stuart? Not after what you did. You've Mrs. M to thank for being here. Put in a good word for you. Think yourself lucky I listened to her and know the boys.
The tiniest frisson of hope, excitement even, runs through me. How is Ellie?
She's none of your business, that's how she is. Don't let me keep you.
I look down at the floor, nod. Thanks for seeing me, Mr. M, I mumble and turn, walk. As I draw level with the glazed ceramic cheetahs, he says,
just here for the weekend.
Due to leave Tuesday morning.
Good.
I let myself out. Somewhere in the house, a tiny-sounding dog is barking hysterically. It's only 10 minutes from Hill House to my mum and dad's. I like driving the wee car, even though it does seem a bit small now. I passed my test in one of these all those years ago, and it's sort of nostalgic. Aye, well, you'll save money on petrol, eh? Dad says, dropping himself into a chair. He looks me in the eye, glances at the door to the hall, and drops his voice slightly.
You all right to come back, aye?
Met with Powell Imrie. Already been to see Donald. Reckon I'll get out of town alive. He still looks serious.
They were both okay.
Powell was fine, Donald was a bit, well, like Donald, but okay. Dad nods. Another kitchenward glance, voice dropping a little again.
I told Mike you might be coming back for the funeral.
Mike McAvett is the other daddy in town. The Murstons and Mike Mac run their businesses with the minimum of fuss and no guns. They have the weaponry, but they've broken it out only twice in the last 15 years, as far as I know. Dad sits back, relaxes. He looks at me properly.
Looking well. You doing all right?
And with that, we're safely into small talk, largely about what I do and don't possess. I don't possess a car, for example, which Dad seems to think is almost sacrilegious. I keep telling him I don't need one in London. Mum comes in with a big tray and asks about whether I'm happy and about girls. I think about saying something like, they're all shaved these days, Mum. Pubic hair's an endangered species. But that would be a bit weird. And probably wouldn't even shock Mum anyway. I tell her I'm not involved with anybody long-term at present. Too busy. She smiles.
Good to have you back, son.
Good to be back, Mum.
Aye,
Dad says.
Stonemouth by Ian Banks was read by David Tennant. It was abridged by Peter Mackey and was a Heavy Entertainment production. Tomorrow, Stuart catches up with old friends and recalls his first meeting with Ellie Murston.